Yeah, I'm thinking of Laureen Nitecker and her reference to wearing beads, maybe. And of course, she didn't get much credit for her writing till long after her
Yeah.
death. And then just to illustrate your point even further, Trump, the bottom feeder, and Dylan, the Nobel Prize laureate. And Dylan, as late as Modern Times, was writing lyrics like, "That young lazy slut has charmed away my brains." Now, that's not too far from the stance that Donald Trump takes, and yet Dylan is a Nobel laureate, and Trump is a failed presidential
So
candidate.
there's a real continuum. So that's an excellent example. Ezra Pound, and people listening to this might say, well, what in the hell are you doing with Ezra Pound in your book? Because he was certainly a problematic masculine presence. But again, looking at how he comes to write love, it's more the formal kinds of engagements that he discovers. But he has an early poem about his beloved being much too young of a girl. Okay, so he's, slightly better than the Dylan slut, but clearly he's compelled by the very, very young girl that he's fallen for. So, or Robert Creeley, whose poetry I adore, and there's much more slippage in it. There's a way that women are pretty much the objects in his love poetry. A really interesting example, which I'll pull into the mix of the politics here, is Kathleen Fraser was writing a traditional love poetry at the same time that Creeley published For Love in the 60s. And she was asked by George Aubin, who thought she was had a lot of talent. He said, I really like your poetry, I think it's really good. But why would you have all those men in your poetry? Meaning, why did you write love poetry to men? He just found it objectionable. And yet at the same time, Robert Creeley is writing a fairly traditional love poetry to women, and of course, it's a huge popular as well as critical success.
So we're talking 50 years ago, the cultural mores of 50, 60 years ago. You've mentioned the phrase once at least. Your phrase for the poetics of these writers writing at their best is a projective or libidinized field poetics. That's a mouthful in more ways than one. So we know, anyone who knows the history of 20th century poetry knows when you say projective or field poetics, you're talking about Charles Olson, projective verse, and the various essays that complemented that by Robert Duncan or Denise Levertov or what have you. They called it organic for a time, and Robin Blazer and Jack Spicer calling it the practice of outside, and something that goes back in English poetry to Cædmon's hymn, which was a received poem, or this notion of dictation that many poets have engaged in. So tell us what you mean when you say projective or libidinized field poetics.
So as an initial corrective, and I'm not the only person who has said this, Marjorie Perloff, in an infamous essay, has argued that Olson took his poetics very seriously from Ezra Pound, as well she'll mention Williams. But so my book takes up that argument, and so finds Pound engaging in a projective love, and actually finds the kind of work that he does with HD and Imagism, which is not usually seen as an erotic poetics, but if you actually look at it, the work they did together and the initial poems were based on erotic texts or scenarios. So projective, in that sense, is to use, and then I use Olson's terminology because he takes what they're doing and conceptualizes it. So the word projective, according to Olson, is that one perception must lead directly to another perception. And in my book, I say one perception or language phrase must lead directly to another. What you get is a poetics of quick associations in which the preceding perception or language phrase is the basis for the next. And what that allows is for a poet who wishes to write love or write erotically, not to have to take on the mimetic positions. I am the lover and I love you. I love this about you. I love that about you. You are wonderful. But rather to begin with an eros and move it through different sets of perceptions in which the I as lover drops away and you essentially get a libidinized field. You get a field of phrases without it all having to come back to the lover who keeps professing their love. So I say that this tradition is particularly helpful and open for writers who are not white, male, heterosexual. And so that means in my book, H.D., Robert Duncan, Kathleen Fraser, and Nathaniel Mackey, because the position of the lover, the I declaiming their love, is really a position that is built around a white, masculine, heterosexual lover. And Nate Mackey is an interesting case in point, because although he was very compelled by Olson, in some ways he was more drawn in by Duncan. And in my book, Duncan is a prime chapter and moment in the projective love and libidinized field poetics, because he really begins there and he really wants to write love and he's really frustrated in the kind of writing and the kind of emotions, the kind of sensations that he's having in his early love relations. And whereas a biographer might say, oh, well, he gradually figured things out and had a love relation that worked for him and matured and accepted his homosexuality. My argument in my book was that by trying to write lover-beloved poetry, that the form was all wrong for him, because he was in love with the same sex lover, so the beloved didn't quite work, and he wasn't a white male heterosexual lover. The semantics, the positionality, the agency of love poetry presumes that, and that's hidden. People don't see that. But all you have to do is take an old love poem, beautiful old love poem, say by Yeats, and say, I'm going to read this from my agency as a woman. And once one does something like that, it's a ludicrous poem because it doesn't signify across gender or across agencies. So basically the argument is that this associational delivery, the projective love libidinized field poetics, enables lovers of different ilk to actually have a very powered and erotic verse. And so why Pound? You know, shouldn't he be far worse than Creeley, Petrarch, and all of those guys? Because he was a fascist in addition to a sexist. The argument in the book is that he found love poetry archaic. He didn't get on board with it. He found it didn't quite convince him. And yet he was very interested in writing a love poetry. And so the argument is, in combination with his work with H.D. in Imagism, that he eventually comes to discover a projective writing. And very important to him is that it's a projective love writing. And that's how he gets there.